One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Josh Brown, it's Monday, but it's not Monday.
It's actually Thursday. We got a long weekend, Scott, UK with bank holidays.
Yeah.
I can't wait to do nothing all weekend.
Save, and by do nothing, I mean plugging Dragon's Dogma 2.
Is that what you're going to do? Are you going to start it again?
Should we
do the whole podcast like this?
How much would a average person put up with if we did an entire podcast like this?
Everyone's clicked off already. They said, no, thank you.
How to even go into this? I'm too sideswiped by people saying that Paddington 2 is a 10 out of 10 film. Can't believe it.
We are coming into recording this podcast immediately after Scott has hated on two of the best sequels of all time. Those, of course, being Dune 2 and Paddington 2.
Oh.
How would you hate little Paddington, Scott?
What you like
nice
about him is one thing.
Little bear.
We'll talk about some video game releases for April. We're going to talk about what are coming across April. But this Dune 2 discourse, I can't get it. Can't get that film. Don't like the franchise. Can't get it.
I think it's fair enough.
So
it's an esoteric film,
yes,
to be fair.
True.
I can see people disliking it. I didn't really rate the first one that much. I liked it. But as I've said many times, and I'm boring myself with my Dune takes, but Dune 2 was a special moment for me, but
I think it's,
you know,
just,
if it's not for you, not everything has to be.
I just wish it was, though. The Dune 2 stuff, and then in the office, we were talking about best sequels, and someone said Paddington 2, and also I'm sideswiped by Andy Murray saying that Dune 2 is better than Predator.
It is.
No, it's not!
It is. Dune 2, better for me than Predator, better than me. Maybe that's it, actually. But I'm not a real Predator guy, you know.
Predator 1 masterpiece. Anyway, we'll see what people say in the wild when this audio is released.
Yeah, I know, we're just...
Recency bias has had you.
I've never been a Predator guy. This is the wind-up, by the way, but I've never been a Predator guy.
Is it the wind-up?
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's a take I've kept to myself because I know you and Ewan love Predator, and
yeah,
I don't want to be the guy who's like, oh, I don't really rate Predator that much. I think Predator's
cool.
I think it's good.
I'm being that guy with Dune.
No, I know, but...
I hate Dune.
There's nothing... that's what I'm asking you, though.
Yes.
I'm saying, Scott, do you like Predator? There's nothing to be gained for you two having a love-in on Predator and me putting in, like, well, do you want to hear my take? I don't think it's all that good.
I am curious about why someone wouldn't like the immaculate masterpiece that is Predator, but that'll be a take for another time, possibly some sort of off-topic wind-up that we might be doing in the near future.
Speaking of
Go
Scott
on.
Tilford, what a lovely segue.
Thank you.
We promised in last week's episode that the Q&A would be up on Spotify, where you could leave your comments for this future podcast, and then I forgot to turn it on because we were so busy, and I think everyone probably listened to that podcast on Spotify and didn't see it. Now it is up on that episode, and it will be up on this one if you're listening to it on Spotify. But even if you're not, because I know people listen across Acast, Apple Music, or wherever you get your podcasts, if you want to send those messages to me, either on Twitter or on Instagram, for now, I will make sure I collate them for when we record the podcast, and I'm sure Scott will do a tweet closer to the time to get a lovely roundup of them.
Yes, we'll put stuff together. I also want to do some sort of email-based system for people to send in their questions, thoughts, etc. But, well, that's for future us to figure
out. That's the thing. That would be ideal, but I'm not promising it because I know how busy we get, and I don't know if we'll be able to deliver it by next week. But you never know.
I'll...
Maybe there'll also be an email address to contact by then.
I've not set up an email account since 2002. I don't even know how you do that anymore.
I think I'm with you. You know,
I've got the same one for a very long
work,
time. Yeah.
You know, but they set it up for
they
me.
Gave us it.
They gave me it.
I've not picked an email and set one up since Orange was called Free. Are they even called Orange? I think EE used to be called Orange, used to be called FreeServe. That was when I was setting up emails.
FreeServe.net. Orange, that's going back a bit.
Yeah, I'm predating Orange. I have no segue, but we are going to talk about things that are coming out in April, just a handful of different games. Because honestly, a wider topic here is that for the most part, the gaming year of 2024 pretty much ends at the end of April.
You know what? Honestly, kind of thank God. And that's not because I don't want games to play. It's because I've already got too many games to play because the first 3 months of the year have been so rammed with quality releases, and I've tried to get through as many as I possibly could. But for me personally, I'm happy to take a beat over the summer and catch up I've missed from this year. Maybe finally play Tekken 8, maybe go back to 2023 releases that I missed, catch up on them as well, because there's plenty over the past 16, 18 months that I just haven't had time to play. And it's having a clean slate, that might be magic.
When are you going to be playing Metroid Dread / Prince of Persia and the Lost Crown?
When your child is...
tells you to do it, yeah.
When they're old enough to speak and can tell me to do it. Josh. One day is the answer to that, Scott Tilford. Do you want to know something?
It's going to hurt me. This.
I don't think so. I was briefly mentioning it before we came in to record. Right. Makey Jakey did another video
on
Red Dead Redemption 2, a game, as you all know, I absolutely love, was in my top 10 of all time, the podcast that we did, and watching him kind of gush about it, it just made me want to go back to that world, because I've not played it on, I know it doesn't have a modern hardware update, but I want to play the best possible version of that, and I always heard that the Xbox Series X version of it was the best, and I played it on PS4 Pro, which was still lovely, but I kind of want to go back to it. I wish they just drop a 60 frames per second update or something for it.
Yeah, apparently it never got any frame rate patches, but apparently it did get some HDR lighting fix that, we'd all finished the game by then, but apparently, the lighting looks way better, but that game looks stunning anyway.
That's it.
But yeah, apparently the Series X version, I think it would have been on Xbox One X back in the day.
That's
but
the now, one I was thinking of, yes.
Now, Series X, I think, upscales everything to like a 4K 30 with a really good HDR, and it's like a locked 30. So it should look pretty good.
You're going to be off for a little bit, but I know your priority is going to be the child, the life.
I mean, in theory, but we'll see.
Into this world,
Stellar Blade's coming out. Mate.
That's what I was going to ask. Is there anything that you've like? I mean, a new game might be too much of a commitment, but is there anything you've got in mind that you want to be replaying while the baby is asleep, so you can just get to?
No, yeah, I'm waiting to see what it feels like to actually just look after life, and then I'll see if I even have any brain capacity left after. I have no idea what this is all going to feel like. But there are things. This is a nice little segue into what's coming out in April, because April 18th, Final Fantasy 16 gets its final DLC, The Rising Tide.
Oh my God, is that soon?
Yeah. Ooh. And this is like a huge thing. So like over on the Square Enix side, you've got Naoki Yoshida, the games director, talking about how they're adding stuff to the ending, and there's a surprise for fans, and like, oh, we're going to be fleshing stuff out. And then they've revealed some screenshots from this. One of them, or one of the parts of this DLC, is like this endless arena battle mode thing, but the menus look like Final Fantasy 3, 4, like the old school Final Fantasies, which is nectar to me. But this is the DLC that's based around Leviathan, which is like the one...
what did you call them? I know exactly what you mean. What?
Icons.
Yes.
E-I-K-O-N, icons, from the game that doesn't actually show up in the game itself, but it is mentioned in some of the game's like files and everything when people started data mining it. And it always seemed like there was one landmass you can see in Final Fantasy 16, like off the coast, that it's and it looks quite icy, looks a bit watery, looks like a whole thing that if you were going to set a Leviathan DLC, that's where you would do it. But yeah, not only are we getting this new icon stuff, there's a new way to play, and they've added this combat trial thing, more story content, whatever, but then they've been out there talking about like, oh, there's a surprise for fans and we're doing a bit more with the end game and stuff like that. Apparently Jill's gonna, well, the fan theory is that it's a Jill chapter, because everyone was quite disappointed by the fact you couldn't do more with Jill, like overall, like her story just kind of peters out, and she's left just sort of wanting in terms of like not even knowing if Clive's okay or whatever at the end of that game story. And to me, I really love that character. I love them together. I thought that was awesome. So like, I hope they do something more meaningful with Jill. I think it's weird if they have to plug that chapter in between stuff and then the game ends like it always did, because I do love the very end when you do the time jump and you get what's happening in the future. But I guess thoughts on this? I know they've already had one DLC that I know you didn't play, and it was quite a standard thing anyway.
Did they? Did that happen while I was off?
Maybe,
I
can't
even remember them dropping DLC.
It was really, I can't even remember the name of it, but I know, I forget the name of it, but it was just a combat trial thing.
Oh, okay.
It was very simple. I don't know if you remember the big tower that was in the open world.
Yes.
It was just that.
Right.
That thing randomly came back to life, and these random three Geordie characters were like, what's going on with this tower, eh?
Oh, that sounds pretty good.
It was all right. You go, I remember that. I think they were Geordies. I remember them having accents anyway. Point being that you just work your way up a tower, and then you fight some dudes, and then there's a few little plot revelations as to what that tower is, but nothing big.
What are you expecting from the scale of this? Obviously, you've got a whole icon. We've got the tease from the original game, but are you expecting something like the DLC for Final Fantasy 15, which sort of allowed people to reappraise the entire game and added like missing parts?
What, like the Royal Edition?
Yeah, yeah, like that
was kind of, yeah. Well, they did all the character specific episodes, like episode Ignolus and all that kind of stuff. I don't know, like the way that they've shown the combat, Leviathan's combat is just like giving a gun to your character, like it's a whole bunch of projectile stuff. So I don't know. I really loved 16, so like I don't really need more of stuff. I would take Jill stuff. That's about all I need.
You've answered my question because I was going to ask you next.
Yes.
Fan of 16 and the world of 16 and your friend Ben Starr's Clive in 16.
Yes.
Do you want them to franchise it? Not exactly like they've done with 7, which is maybe a little bit overboard, but are you up for like more than just this DLC if they do Final Fantasy 16 2 or some of the spin-offs set in the world? Because I you know me, I have my problems with 16, but that world was so tantalizing in the scale of the world with those icons. I'd personally be up for more, but I do see the argument for just leaving it.
I think they've said this is it, but they said, I'm sure they said that, like, because they announced two DLCs almost straight after the game came out, and then it was the whole thing of like what are they going to be, and they didn't know. And I'm sure at the time they said they were going to be listening to people and figuring it out as they went forward. And then, like I said, that first DLC was just very combat trial-y. It was fine. I like that game's combat enough. And then this one seems to be way more story focused, and we're fleshing out this final icon and something to do with the entity whose name I forgot that you fight at the very end. Ultima.
Yeah, it's Ultima.
That whole
thing.
And so, like, I appreciate an ending to something.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of Final Fantasy X-2 or Final Fantasy XIII's trilogy. So, like, I like the idea of an ending as long as it lines up with whatever the creatives wanted to do. I'm just looking forward to more music from Masayoshi Shusaka and then seeing whatever ideas they've got on the combat front and the scale side of it. Like, if we're getting another massive boss fight, then that's cool. So, yeah, that's out on the 18th of April. I threw in because this was like a bit of a cult classic indie thing, or it might become a cult classic, but it's definitely got the indie buzz. April 25th, another Crab's Treasure is out.
What is this?
This is a Souls-like where you play as a little crab.
I am so
And you're
in.
Underwater. It looks very nicely animated. The whole gimmick with this thing is that you're putting different things on your back because you're trying to find the right shell.
Wow.
And this is a very cutesy take on the Souls formula, but it's been shown at various game showcase stuff, E3 style showcases. And I feel like it's been getting quite a lot of buzz for the last a couple of years, the idea of like a more like animated take on a Souls formula.
This has gone completely over my head.
I think you probably recognize footage of it. Maybe
something about it.
Just a little crab, and you put a tin can on your back, and then that changes your build.
This is amazing.
And then maybe
I've missed all of this.
Then you get a proper conch shell, and maybe that changes your build, but you're on the way to get your proper shell back.
Oh, so maybe April isn't as empty as I thought.
Yeah, I mean, anything with a Souls formula, you're going to be a big fan of.
You know what? This is the thing. I'm thinking about the games that I'm going to get to, compiling a little bit of a backlog, and a lot of them are Souls games. Mm-hmm. I want to go play Lords of the Fallen from last year. Now that's been discounted and hopefully patched a little bit, and there are a couple of others I've been eyeing on Xbox Game Pass, so maybe I'll throw in this as well, just have a little bit of a Souls loving.
It will be a nice Game Pass addition. Like, I am so utterly done with the Souls formula, but I like the idea of seeing if this plays a bit faster. Like, I like the idea of something that's like hyper well animated. If there's one really stellar thing about the Princess Peach game, it's how beautifully it's animated.
Nice.
And I kind of just miss non-realistic art styles, and I want them done with a budget. Like, I like Penny's Big Breakaway, like by the makers of Sonic Mania, but it doesn't flow that well animation wise.
You have said something very important there, because one of my favorite art styles over the past few years, non what do you even describe it as? Photorealistic. Mm. Have you heard of a game called Foam Stars, Scott Tilford?
Well,
Foam Stars has such a good art style. The game sucks and the microtransactions are bad, but it looks so cool.
That game is dead.
It is. That game is so dead.
It launched dead.
It did.
Some of us looked at a corpse. Well, you looked at a corpse and went, I think that's got life in it.
I think, it's a sort of masochist that I am. it's been frustrating to see the energy people have had for the microtransactions in Dragon's Dogma 2. It's like, where were you guys when Foam Stars launched and
40
selling
quid.
40 quid skins in their free-to-play game?
Sickening. Yeah,
it looks good, though.
I agree. Foam Stars does animate really well. I want more top-tier animated work. I'm going to get to some more stuff that is more animated, but that's why I would pick up another Crab's Treasure.
Do you reckon, Marvel Rivals... Yes. was announced yesterday. And that's arse style. Art style. You can tell it's about to be a long weekend.
Yeah.
That's like another game that is obviously comic book in nature, but it's very colourful. Like even the designs are a little bit different from what you might expect from those Marvel heroes. Obviously, they're still recognisable, but it's got a little bit of razzmatazz to it. Do you think we're in an era where that's in a sort of post-Overwatch world where that's sort of becoming the norm now? Because
actually,
in some ways I'm a little bit, not sick of it, but as you know, I'm sick of the incredibly high contrast deserts where the orange is contrasted with the bright blue sky. Like there's something about the pop of those colours that I've kind of... I'm almost getting to the point where I notice it as much as I notice the grey and brown of the military shooter era.
But the 360 era.
I still prefer the popping colours over the grey and brown of the 360 era.
I'll tell you what, though, like, that Marvel Rivals game, which is literally Overwatch, you've got devs out there on Twitter just saying, hey, we were literally told to copy this. Like, look at the concept art, make one of them. When I saw that game in motion in the trailer, I initially did like a double take because I was like, oh, it looks like a digital art. But then when you look at the gameplay, I think they've got a really cool rendering look where it's not cel shaded, but everything kind of does have like a hand drawn hue to it. Like you've got these really thick outlines of the characters, and then like a dip in like texture detail that still makes it look like a sketch come to life. And I think they're walking quite a nice line with it. The game is like cynical as hell. It literally is Overwatch, even down to the damage animation when you hit someone. But that's like a step in a better direction. I just want more differentiation in art styles.
Yeah.
Especially with a bit of budget put behind them. Because like I love the way that obviously Nintendo's games move, but some of Nintendo's stuff, like Mario Battle League, has unbelievably gorgeous animation. Prince of Persia is stunning. Like Lost Crown from this year was awesome. I just want more stuff like that. Not everything has to look realistic. I'm a bit bored of the old realism. Speaking of which, that was on April 25th for another Crab's Treasure. The day after, all hell breaks loose. April 26th is the day of Sandland, Stellar Blade, and Top Spin 2K25. But let's talk a little bit about Sandland.
Yeah, come on, because I'm obviously more interested in this game after the tragic news of Akira Toriyama earlier this month, I think it was.
Yep.
And this wasn't a game that was on my radar previously, but now I'm intrigued and you know way more about it than I do. Is it something that I should be looking forward to? Because it's got good previews.
The way they've rolled this out is so strange. When Akira Toriyama passed away, the official account immediately tweeted out and said, hey, we've got a demo, we've got this thing, it's ready.
Oh, that's
which
a
is a No, it's not the best, but at the same time, if that demo was about to go live anyway, I was going to say you might as well remind people that what something he contributed to is available, which is maybe the most charitable take you can take on that timing. The demo is really bad.
Oh.
But it's become a thing for the followers of that game, the little community around it, and some headlines and stuff saying like, yes, the demo was terrible because it's taken from an earlier build of the game and the actual, but the hands-on version that the critics have got a hold of is from further along and that's better. So I wonder, with that in mind, if the demo for the public was kind of rushed or whatever, because of Toriyama's passing, just box something up and get it out there. I don't know. I obviously genuinely don't know. But like you said, the hands-on previews have been better. There are, promising features in the demo. Like it is a big open world thing. You're playing as like this little devil looking character. It looks beautiful. I love Toriyama's artwork. I get that people got a bit sick of it over the years, but I'm a big sucker for that. I love Dragon Quest, love Dragon Ball and whatever. So like, Yeah, it was, the demo was really flat and just quite barren. I mean, it's a wasteland, but it was like in a bad way. It didn't look like an intentionally barren environment. But you are flicking between third-person melee combat, summoning different vehicles, using capsules straight out of Dragon Ball.
Yeah,
you just throw them on the ground, thing pops up. But it is kind of like an Akira Toriyama-infused version of Mad Max, which is like, when it clicks, it's really cool, and you are doing vehicle combat, and you are doing like taking out outposts full of enemies and stuff. I just find a lot of the character dialogue is really flat, where they're just saying the most obvious thing they could do, like, isn't it fun being on an adventure? And then like the old character is like, I used to adventure a lot when I was younger, or whatever. And I was just like, this is so boring, like, compared to how promising a new Akira Toriyama franchise should feel.
Who's making it, do you know?
I don't, but I will Google in real time, my friend,
because that's the thing for me. I don't know if this is going to be, again, one of those...
A company called Ilka.
Interesting. Like, disposable, I would say. You know, that kind of, like, cheaper games that we've seen quite a few of over the years. I know this is, like, an original thing, but we've seen a lot of, I think, a lot of anime tie-ins that have just kind of been pushed out where they've been
Well, that's the thing,
you know?
Like, if you, I just brought up their history. So they worked on the One Piece game in 2023.
That's exactly what I was
Which is, like, was received, like, well enough, but it is in that bracket of, like, the One Punch Man game. Yeah. And I love the Demon Slayer game, but it's the same thing. It's just another arena fighter.
Yeah.
I know with Sandland, it's a lot bigger. One Piece Odyssey, I didn't play. They did do the remakes of Pokemon Diamond and Pearl for Nintendo, called like Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl back in 2021. And they were like, they were unambitious remakes.
Okay.
Like, they had a complete reskin. They look well enough, but it was the old school Pokemon formula, which obviously hasn't changed that much, but it was like just a one-to-one. Like, you were doing the same stuff. There's something about that style of game design where I appreciate the economical side of it, and you can put more flair into the animation or the presentation. But yeah, Sandland's a weird one where, like, I was default sight because it's a new Akira Toriyama thing. I know it's based on a bunch of manga, but when actually going hands-on with it, I was like, this feels horrible.
You know what's crazy? That might be the first game your child ever sees. And that's, you know what? It might not be a great game, but if the Akira Toriyama artwork is the first thing that child ever sees in terms of pop culture, that's not a bad way to start life.
No, it really isn't. And I mean, I should do my duty and show them something at Metal Gear or something something more immediate. Just Hideo Kojima's face.
Straight into one of the lectures from the end of Metal Gear Solid 2.
Just live, Snake. It's called Snake Tailfoot at this point. But the way Sandland's rolling out, they've kind of been quite close to the chest with a lot of the, like, obviously the demo's out there, but I feel like they're waiting to wow people with the final version. And hopefully that's the case. There's a lot of cool ideas here. So maybe, like I said, it's a mix of third-person combat and vehicle stuff with a gorgeous art style. But yeah, also on April 26th, that's Sandland, and then Stellar Blade. I feel like that's going to steal the month.
It absolutely is. I feel like, yeah, if that was the only game that month, it might as well be anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, there are, of course, other things coming out that we are looking forward to, but Stellar Blade is the one. And if that's the final biggie before we get a little break, that would work selfishly very perfectly for me, because I feel like that gives me enough time to finish up Dragon's Dogma 2. Mm. It gives me time to not have to crunch my way through Stellar Blade, and then I can just chill out afterwards and catch up on Final Fantasy. It's a good cap to this year, especially in terms of, for me, not first party, but Sony exclusives. Mm. You know, they've had great second party titles this year, and hopefully Stellar Blade will be another one of those.
The thing with Stellar Blade is that I thought it looked very similar to Nier Automata, and then, like, the more that came out, the developers, I forget the name of the dev studio, but they said they were very influenced by Nier Automata, which is cool. But then the more people have got hands on with it and the more gameplay they've shown off, it's a lot more like a Souls game. And I was like, oh, I want to be able to take on like seven dudes at once and do backflips and kick off the walls and everything else. I don't want to be worried. I'm not going to guard and turtle around an enemy over and over again. So I wonder.
At the time of recording this podcast, the previews actually just dropped, and everyone is saying this thing is more like Sekiro than you might have realized, which, again, for me, is a From Software.
I did love Sekiro, to be fair.
Up for it, and will be up for...
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout.
36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
One of those games, initially when I read the other month that it was going to be more of a Souls-type experience, I was similar to you. I was kind of thinking, oh, I've played a lot of those recently. For whatever reason, now I've been through Baldur's Gate and Dragon's Dogma and Rise of the Ronin. I'm thinking I'm back.
And if Stellar I'm thinking Blade I'm back.
Is anywhere near as good as Sekiro was, I'm thinking I'm back in
That's
a big
true.
Way.
If they let me do sort of like really cool over-the-top moves in a Soulsian formula, then maybe I'm more up for that. It was just the camera work in Souls games just bores me at this point. And then I want to get stuck in and have more of like a back and forth in a faster way against multiple enemies and things like that. So I am curious. I did see, I didn't really follow up on this very much, that there was a bit of, obviously there's a lot of conversation around the main character in Stellar Blade looking like voluptuous and gorgeous and whatever, based on a real person called Shin Joon, a South Korean model. And that whole, there was a thing that blew up like last week where it was some new updated Xbox terms of service encouraging characters to not look so over the top.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I didn't really follow that up that much, but I wonder if that is going to become a talking point, because we haven't had such a brazen return to ridiculously over the top sexy characters in quite a while. Like Bayonetta was a conversation in 2014.
Yeah.
Before that, it was Dead or Alive in like 2005-ish with the beach volleyball stuff. And like, I personally don't care. Like Shin Joon is a gorgeous person. The character looks really beautiful, whatever. But I'm curious if that ignites a whole conversation again.
I always, you know what, I'm sort of on the other side of this in a way, because when I kind of struggle to engage with this to a certain extent, because a lot of it is sort of
bad faith
online discourse.
They're trying to suppress the sexiness,
yeah,
Josh.
Yeah, right. But I always think, like, did it ever go away? Especially from non-American developers.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know.
Oh, dude, no, yeah, it absolutely didn't change from Japan.
Literally look at Final Fantasy VII and the discourse around that, like, earlier this month with Tifa in her beach costume,
yeah.
Aerith in her beach costume. It's like, did this go away? Like, yeah,
no.
We've got more realistic and more photoreal female protagonists in games like Horizon and The Last of Us, which is, you know, it's amazing to see different body types, different looks become represented and normalized and stuff. But the people who are, in my eyes, cry-arsing about the more overtly sexualized characters going away, did they?
They didn't overall. I think, yeah, definitely from an Eastern lens, you get them like tons of over-the-top characters. Like you said, Tifa, or look at Xenoblade and the woman that's in Xenoblade 2. But yeah, I think it's interesting that whole, because you think of someone like Lady Dimitrescu when Resident Evil 8 was coming out, the amount of horn that was around that game's coverage. And yeah, I mean, the thing is, the devs in this have just steered so much into it, just saying like, yeah, we love, I mean, there's the same thing with Nier Automata. I forget the name of the dude, the Nier Automata man, who wears that mask.
Oh,
that one
man.
Dude. Yoko Taro.
Yoko Taro.
Yoko Taro was like, yeah, I'm a big fan of the sexy ladies, and that's why I did it all over Nier. And yeah, I just think it's interesting in regards to, like, if you just steer into it whole hog, then you could embrace it and make it part of your game's marketing and whatever. And, like, in the previews for Stellar Blade, one of the unlockable costumes is pretty much a nude mod. Like,
right,
it's just a string bikini thing. Like, it's just like, we're just going all the way into that. And like I said, personally, I could not care less, but I am curious if that ends up becoming a talking point again. I like good-looking people. I'll take the good-looking people.
You are a good-looking person, Scott.
Hey, we both are. We're both doing well.
Yeah, I think that's the only reservation I have about it is that I don't want it to be sort of taken as a win by those bad faith people who are like, oh, this is what we've been talking about. We should have had the touched up version of Aloy and Horizon this whole time.
Oh,
stick
God.
It to you.
No,
guys.
I don't bring them into it. I just wonder about it's just that, like, that reminds me of, like, was it Fire Emblem when the boob sliders were removed from the Western release?
Oh, maybe, I'm not sure.
And there was like a whole army of people going, we need our boob sliders. And I was like,
look up Ashley's skirt in Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, I was like, how repressed are you? Like, just, it's cool. That. Just go outside. It's fine.
I do like with the more revealing costume in Stellar Blade. I like that the downside is you get no shields.
that's the thing. There's a fun way to do it. I remember during the preview stuff, people were showing off. There's a lot of, let's call them, jiggle physics in this as well.
Yeah.
So this is like jiggle physics, the game, to some people. But hopefully the combat side of it is very, very solid. And we'll see how it goes. The last thing on April 26th, because all three games are on the 26th, Sandland, Stellar Blade, and Topspin 2K25. Were you a Topspin fan?
I was a huge Topspin.
I think this is low-key going to be a big event because you've got, you got Virtua Tennis and Topspin were the two pillars of, like, let's say the early 2000s tennis games. And I feel like the tennis genre was a bigger deal in gaming. And when they announced that Topspin was coming back, I feel like you saw like an eruption of like, finally. Like, I remember this from my childhood. It never kept going. Why do we not have nice, fun, accessible tennis games? And I know that like Virtua Tennis kept going. And there was another tennis game.
Was it 2K, wasn't it? No.
2K is who's reviving Topspin.
Is it?
Because they're doing with the Topspin IP what they did with WWE, so it's just Topspin 2K25, and they'll just be doing one every year. But not to spend too long on it, but I think it's just a cool thing to see. I like that it's just a return of an IP that a lot of people loved, and hopefully it'll just... Tennis games are always fun.
Honestly, like, you've sparked my nostalgia in a huge way by just mentioning the name Virtua Tennis. I completely forgot about that series and how much I loved it back in the day. Me and my brother used to play the crap out of Topspin and Virtua Tennis, and I'm up for it. It's not going to be a game that I'm going to go out of my way to buy day one, especially when I'll be playing a Stellar Blade. But if it ever drops down in price, or if it ever comes to a Game Pass or PlayStation Plus style thing, you bet I'm going to put some time in that.
Yeah.
I love the... I don't know if it's... It probably won't even be the same, but the career modes in those old sports games. Like, I used to do seasons upon seasons in Tiger Woods PGA Tour.
The Tiger Woods games were awesome.
Upon seasons in the Topspin games, and it's like, there's something about getting in to one of those career modes that I've not personally experienced since FIFA 14, which was the last one that I played for more than just a casual game here and there. Right. So I always kind of, maybe with the clean slate, maybe it's time for something like Topspin to come back.
The NBA 2K series has sort of been renowned for having horrific story modes. Like, they had the one that was directed by Spike Lee a couple of years ago, and it was really ridiculous and over the top, and there's a stupid twist at the end of it and whatever. But I wonder if they go whole hog, if they have a really over-the-top cinematic mode for a tennis game. I'd be super up for that. But I'm curious what the return of Topspin feels like, because it's been a long time. And obviously you got all the bells and whistles of playing like a really good high production tennis game online and things like that. So maybe
that's how we'll record the podcasts when you have your child. We'll get Topspin. I've got Stellar Blade on my mind.
That's what the microtransaction store will be called.
It absolutely will. Yeah absolutely will. It'll bloody skin you of your money. Hey. Maybe we'll boot up Topspin and just get on Party Chat and record them that way.
I would never thought of recording a podcast through Party Chat.
That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
I couldn't, in my head, I can't think of how we'd get the audio to record.
We could, how about this?
Go on.
We will never do this, but we go live. We do a live podcast while we're playing Topspin, put our faces in the corner, we're chatting, gameplay on screen, We're taking people's questions. It's amazing. Oh, I want to do it.
That's the next, that's a podcast revelation. I don't think anyone's done that. Like, genuinely, I think that's a whole thing.
This is what we can start. This could be our little niche.
I do love niche. April 30th. Well, there's only a couple left here. We'll do them quite quickly because the wrestling boys need to be back in the studio that we're in. But April 30th is when Sea of Thieves launches on PlayStation 5. I didn't note down the specific date, but April is also when another one of the Xbox games comes across.
Grounded.
Yeah, about halfway through April. So we'll get the whole conversation on, is this the end of Xbox? Has this killed it? Oh my God. Or whatever. But it has been interesting seeing that Sea of Thieves was the number one trending game. People have been pre-ordering it or paying for it, etc. And Sea of Thieves has come a long way. It's kind of like the Xbox No Man's Sky, where like the original version was kind of lambasted for being so thin. And like, I had a lovely time on Sea of Thieves, but only for about half an hour. And I felt like I'd seen everything. Whereas it seems like they've fleshed that out considerably since then. Are you picking up Sea of Thieves?
No.
Me neither.
Not because of any knock towards the game itself, just those online games that kind of require you to have a party or a band of thieves to get the most out of it. Like, I just don't have the pals who would play that with me. And I feel like I'll probably get the best version of it now, whether I'm playing on Xbox or PlayStation with all of the expansions and stuff and updates that have been added. But I like that it's there. I like that that's there. I like that Grounded's there. And it would be interesting, like you say, to have completed that first wave of Xbox games that have made it over to PlayStation. Because, I was surprised at the popularity of Sea of Thieves on the PlayStation Store pre-launch. So it's going to be interesting if that is a success. Will it then allow Microsoft to commit to bringing more of their games over if they see, look at the sales on Sea of Thieves, look at the sales on Hi-Fi Rush.
I assume it'll be the beginning of that whole movement, especially Sea of Thieves is their big, the one that's leading the whole charge as well. Like, it's not Grounded, it's not Pendermen. It's kind of, Hi-Fi Rush is out now, I think.
Yes.
But Sea of Thieves, I assume, it's PlayStation 5 only, but Hi-Fi Rush is on Switch.
You know, we often talk about E3 moments and the big pops that you can get in those shows, the big mic drops. What if, not this year, maybe in a few years' time, we finally get a new Elder Scrolls 6 trailer.
Right.
And you get the title card, you get coming soon, you get Xbox logo, you get the PC Windows logo, you get Mac logo, whatever, and then what fades in is the PlayStation logo. And it's confirmed that it's going to be a proper third-party release across all the machines. I don't know if that would be good for Xbox.
Pay the Nintendo logo in.
But that would be a huge... Yeah, pay the Nintendo logo in. That would be a huge, huge pop and would get people talking. And I wonder if this shift now will lead to games like that coming out.
I think it has to.
The future, right?
I mean, there'll be a video on the channel that should have been up for a few days by the time people hear this, where me, Sai, and Stevie were going over the news coming out of the GDC, the Game Developers Conference. Phil Spencer talking to Polygon about the state of Xbox, and then Chris Dring over at GamesIndustry.biz talking about him talking to developers about how Xbox sales are flatlining across Europe, and developers, according to Chris Dring, have said they wonder why the hell they're supporting it in the first place. Mm. And so the state of Xbox overall as a brand, the strength of that brand, etc., seems like it's a bit wobbly, like they recovered after that whole is everything going multi-platform thing.
Yeah,
but I think those conversations are only going to continue, and people wonder why they've got an Xbox in the first place when everything else is available on the other systems.
Phil's excuse, by the way, I used to go to bat for Phil Spencer.
I know,
seeing him the other day,
I've not fully turned, but okay,
just him saying we had to cut all of those jobs because the industry didn't grow enough.
That was terrible.
My man, no one forced you to spend $69 billion on this acquisition and all of the other ones. Mm-hmm. And I just think, at a certain point, I'd rather you not even make excuses like that. I mean, come on, it's so brazen.
That whole
thing
of they acquired Activision Blizzard King, and then I don't know the number for the amount of people that they let go, but I saw a lot of the commentary being those people ate up the losses of the Xbox sales and the Xbox brand and et cetera, because now that they're part of it, they're culpable and we can get rid of those people and balance the sheets that way. Maybe. I don't know anywhere near enough about the whole thing to be conclusive about it, but Xbox is in such a weird place. And I guess
what a strange place to be sort of leaving off the year. Like, we've had this influx of great games at the start be massively juxtaposed with the bloody horrific layoffs and all of the industry news that's been happening. And it's just, I think we said in a previous podcast where I was talking about this feels like, in a good way, 2023's leftovers in terms of games.
Yes.
And I feel like what Elf ever drops at the end of the year, it's going to be the real start for me for the second half of the generation, and it's almost like 2024 is going to kick in then. Like,
yeah,
when we get the next Assassin's Creed, which is going to be like a live service, when we get the PS5 Pro announcement, when Nintendo announces Nintendo Switch 2. A lot of exciting things, but I think we're in a real period of transition at the moment.
No, totally. I might even do a video called The End of Gaming.
Let's do it. What a mic drop that would be before you leave.
I know. I was just thinking that. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to go. I'm just drop the mic and I'll see you guys in like a month and a half. because I do think it's the end of an era of gaming. I think there's, like you said, a big transitionary period. I think it'll probably kick back in when GTA 6 is around. But that's not until halfway through next year. But the industry's got a lot of stuff to figure out. A lot of things that came out of the pandemic, a lot of things that were already a problem before the pandemic that were then made worse. And I think things like hemorrhaging staff is a way to try and course correct, but it's not smooth sailing at all.
Nah.
And the amount of reports, the more you delve into the conversations that happened at GDC, the more every dev is struggling and projects aren't being greenlit. There's not a level of trust in the industry to perform. So nothing is being greenlit.
Do you ever divide your life up into pretend TV seasons, Scott?
I hadn't, but carry on.
I do that sometimes, and it feels like a series finale right now. Like, you're going off to have a baby, the industry is changing, we're getting the last of the first quarter's release of games.
Yeah.
It feels like whenever you come back, it's going to be the start of the next season of life.
of what culture? It definitely will be for us. And the very last thing I'm going to throw in, just for the sake of people marking their calendars, is Braid Anniversary Edition on April 30th. Just a seminal game. Jonathan Blow hasn't had anything else since 2016's The Witness. I saw him doing an interview over on Sacred Symbols, Colin Moriarty's podcast, finally re-emerging from the development hovel that I assume he's been in for the last few years. Just saying that it takes so long to put his games together because he likes to code everything, likes to make sure it's all right and take as long as it takes. But I have to assume that part of funding that is the Braid Anniversary Edition and doing extra content for that. But either way, Braid is 16 years old. That game came out in 2008.
Break your brain a little bit.
Have you not played Braid?
Josh!
What
a revelation. I have not played Braid.
Oh!
And it's not because I think it looks bad.
It's incredible.
It's because everyone was talking about Braid so much when it came out that I feel like I know the game without having played it. And it sort of sapped my enthusiasm for a bit. Like, so much discussion about the ending, the thematics of that game, the look of it, how it was put together, that it's almost a game that I have been too spoiled on to kind of experience it firsthand, but maybe this is the opportunity to get back into it. Perhaps.
I was going
to
say, I'll break your brain. That's not why you should play Braid.
Interesting.
That ending twist stuff, the wider thematics, the new game plus stuff, that's icing on the cake. The meat of that game is that each level is a different time puzzle and a different way of calculating the flow of time. Mm. It's the guts of that thing that are the most mind-blowing, because you've not you played through The Witness. We played through that. No way, really?
Well, this is what I was. That was my second confession. I'll get this out of the way before you can tell me how good it is. Jonathan Blow. I only know Jonathan Blow from the movie Indie Game, the movie,
right? Okay,
where he is in there along with Phil Fish and a bunch of other indie.
Yeah, the Super Meat Boy people
who made Super Meat Boy. Yes. So that's literally all I know him from. I've not played his games. I just know his reputation. Don't know much about the guy himself.
Uh-huh.
But everyone tells me Braid's amazing.
Yeah,
I know so much about that. Everyone, you and Benji Richardson tells me how good The Witness is, but it's puzzle games aren't my genre,
same.
So I never gravitated towards them, but I've always wanted to play The Witness in particular, because that visually, that thing looks incredible.
The Witness is absolutely, oh my God, The Witness hands down is the thing you should play.
Ooh.
Like, dude, the thing is, the reason Jonathan Blow games are next level is because he himself is a genius. Like, the way that he seems to process, or be able to process things like time, messaging, meaning, finding meaning in the world, in life itself, etc. Lots of Buddhist teachings that come through in The Witness that you can actually find in the game. You can actually find seminars in the game and watch people talk these teachings buried in the island inside The Witness Island. But like I said, Braid is all about like cognizance, time passing, things like that. And once you realize each level's gimmick, it's a new way of thinking about time, which is something you didn't even realize you could do as a human, which is really cool. And then, but at the same time, I think The Witness is more approachable, where it's just an island full of different areas, different puzzle types. I would say The Witness is a puzzle game made for people who don't like puzzles.
Oh, that's perfect. Yes.
It's totally same. Like, I'm not someone who's going to bash their head against the puzzle for half an hour. The Witness's whole thing is that each part of the island is a different cognitive process, and you're just trying to figure out, like, how am I supposed to think to do this? And, like, once you get that, you'll then get all the puzzles in a row. And, like, they're not necessarily puzzles, they're just challenging ways to think. And, like, the way that he codifies that stuff about finding meaning in the space is, like, what the whole game is about. And then there's a thing that they do in The Witness that is, like, the most next level thing that is, you'll never see it coming, you can't really have it spoiled for you, but, like, when you stumble upon it, if you hopefully do, that feeling is unlike anything else. It's why people adore Jonathan Blow's work.
You have sold me on it. You know what?
My
girlfriend are looking for something to play.
Do it as a couple.
Because she's not into Dragon's Dogma 2. It turns out that backtracking through the same place for 20 times is fun for me, but not so much fun to watch. So
I'm telling you that
The Witness could be the one.
The two of you should do The Witness. Yeah. I think you would love that. It's me and my wife, my now wife, went through The Witness back in 2016. And just the way people's brains work. Yes. I don't know if you watch The 1% Club.
Well,
but it's a bit like that UK TV show.
It's so funny you mention that, because over Christmas, my mom and dad made me watch The 1% Club and I hated it.
What?
My brain just doesn't work that way.
But like, one of those 15 things you'll get.
It makes me want to cry. It really does. It makes me feel like I'm an idiot.
Right.
It makes me feel so dumb. My brain just doesn't work for those puzzles for whatever reason.
Right.
Which is why I need my girlfriend there, because she'll be able to stop me from crying, stop the tears from coming out of my eyes, because she has a better brain and she'll be able to get through that.
When we watched The 1% Club at Christmas, one of my cousins got everything immediately, including the 1% question. And I was like, well, leave some of it for the rest of us with your immaculate 15 ways of working brain.
All right, you're showing off now.
I know, but still, no, I can only recommend The Witness so much. I think as a couple, it's phenomenal. And it's super cheap now as well.
Yeah, I think it is on PlayStation Plus. So.
Yeah. The amount of love, like, care and attention, the music, going through The Witness the first, you know, there are some of those games that you wish you could experience them again. That thing is, that's such a great shout to go through. If anyone else is listening to me and has always heard of The Witness and hasn't played it, go play The Witness.
Come on, we'll all play The Witness. We'll come back in a month or two time and we'll all, hopefully I'll have a Q&A on Spotify and the bloody email set up by then, and we can all talk about it and
we'll sort everything out. For now, in the UK, it's a bank holiday weekend, so we are recording this on Thursday, but we'll catch you guys across the week because you'll be hearing this on Monday.
Absolutely, and even if you didn't have a bank holiday this weekend, I hope you had a lovely, lovely time.
Bank some good vibes, I say.
Oh, hell yeah, brother.
Good vibe weekend. Thank you all very, very much, and we'll catch you throughout the week. Didn't say our names. That's Josh Brown.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. Go anonymous for this one.
Why not?
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.